The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Call them on 01983 240 240. That's 01983 240 240.
It's Wednesday's Lunchtime Social Debate. We have Rosemary in, and yeah, we also have special guest today. It's, do we call you Dr. Judith?
No, I'm not a doctor. No, just call me Judith.
Oh.
We can if you want to.
Dr.
Judith kind of fits, doesn't it?
It does, actually. It sounds like I should be doing something else, though, doesn't it?
But, yeah.
I was just thinking, you were saying about the weather going into double figures. You're going to have a bit of a problem, aren't you?
Go on.
You've only got 10 fingers.
Oh, crikey.
Sorry.
This is how it's going to be for 55 minutes. Now, Dr. Judith is in, and Dr. Judith is from Physiocare. Is this your company?
It is, it's Physiocare and Sports Injury Clinic.
Yes, it is mine.
But I just put that in because, you know, that's quite important because we see a lot of sports injuries, so yeah.
But you deal with people with non-sporting injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we do lots of other bits.
So your company?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And
you've
got X amount of people, experts around you?
Yeah, we've got 4 other physios working, so there's quite a few of us, and we've got a practice manager who's at our Ride branch because we've got 3 practices on the island, so we're pretty well spread out, which is good.
So if you're referred in any kind of way from doctor, hospital, physiotherapy, would that be they come to see you?
Yeah, they can come see us. I mean, we don't actually accept it. We're not accepting any NHS referrals anymore now. We've just stopping that, actually. We just stopped that a couple of weeks ago. So we are just a private practice. But we have referrals coming from the doctors, GPs or consultants and consultants from the mainland, people who decide they want to come privately, basically, to be seen quicker.
What's the main reason people come? I would imagine it's back problems.
We see a huge number, actually, of different things. Mainly, I would say spinal injuries and spinal problems are quite a large percentage. But we do see a lot of people who have just had operations, who want rehabilitation post-operatively. And also, as I just say, about the sports injury.
Lots of physical sports. Cause many injuries, especially rugby.
You see lots of rugby injuries, lots of sailing injuries on the island, and I mean everything really. So tennis, yoga, you know, all these things still can cause injuries. So
it's strange. They're activities, Ian, that you do.
I'm being ganged up on, aren't I?
Well, it's a fine line, isn't it? Because, I mean, actually people should be active and should be kept physically busy, so to speak, doing stuff. But unfortunately, you're likely to have an injury at some point, you know, if you do particularly contact sports such as football, rugby and other contact sports like hockey, but which is a shame. But I think you have to outweigh it. I think the benefits you get from activity and doing physical exercise far way outside the possibility of having an injury, so it shouldn't be averse
of
doing anything.
A lot of horse riding accidents.
Yeah, lots of people, injuries. Unfortunately, you know, that's how I got into physio, from a horse riding accident when I was 12 years old. So I sort of had early intervention of physio, which is why I became a physio, actually. So
It is a fascinating thing, and I know that we've got a lot to cover, and you probably have to come back and cover, you know, a bit by bit. But if we just sort of outline it today, because what I want to talk about is obviously injuries. What do you do when you get one, and how do you, you know, you can't prevent injuries, but I'm guessing you can help.
Well, you can to a certain extent. I mean, it's good training and good coaching will prevent quite a lot of injuries.
Doesn't your ergonomic thingy come in that, because that's all posture and
that does that. That may be more on the office side of things. Mm. We tend to think about ergonomics, but with general injuries per se, I think you can prevent an awful lot of injuries. Because, I mean, let's be honest, prevention is much better than you know, having an injury. So it's better than a cure, so they say. And there's a lot of advice that we can give, and we give an awful lot of advice to prevent further reoccurrence or prevent injury in the first place.
Okay. Strapping up and things, isn't there?
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, that we often can do that at the time of injury. There are different types of strapping that we use. The very popular one at the moment is called kinesio taping, and it's come from the States. So it's actually invented in Japan, but it has a bit of stretchability, so you can actually use it to actually activate muscles or to switch muscles off, or to prevent swelling and helping swelling. And that's really very, very useful in our practice. We use that a lot. And again, you can show people how to do that so they can actually prevent something happening in the future if they want to.
So is it, were there any that cover things like you just say, for instance, you used to watch football years ago and you'd see people just wearing their kit. Nowadays they're wearing all these bits of tape and athletes have got all these things taped up the back of their legs and all sorts.
Well, that may be because they have an injury, or it may be because they want to prevent an injury, or it could be just psychological support. You know, sometimes if you've got a bit of tape somewhere, you think, actually I'm going to be fine because I've got my tape on. Actually, it might not be doing a huge amount other than giving them that little bit of a psychological boost that, you know, actually they're going to be fine. And I think certainly in high level sport these days, there's a huge amount of psychological things going on, isn't there? They have a lot of coaching from all the psychologists, etc. So it's very important.
Say go and squash match. Yeah. What sort of areas would you suggest they were taped up?
Well, it depends. I mean, it just depends. This is why you have to actually look at the person. It's the holistic.
Should we use Ian as a dummy then?
Well, I'd have to have him running around the squash court. Ian. You probably don't want to do that in here. Not much space. No, I mean, obviously you have to assess somebody. So you look at what they can do, what they can't do, and assess their muscle strength and just general function. If they've got knee pain, etc., you might be honing in on why they've got that knee pain and be giving them specific exercises. Usually we start off with exercises and look at ways that people can strengthen certain areas of their body. So that would be the first line. And then perhaps taping may be necessary. I wouldn't tend to use that as a first line of treatment, actually. Right. Sometimes I do, but usually it's something that you use it as what we call an adjunct to treatment, so to help, and possibly on the second or third session of physio, unless they're coming in with a major sprain or strain, or in a huge amount of pain, then you can put it on.
Because things like rugby, I mean, my brother was in the Navy, he was in the United Services rugby team, and he loves his rugby full stop. I've had this injury, I'm supposed to stop. But then why are you playing? They carry on,
yeah,
don't
they do. But I think there's also an awful lot of pressure probably from the teammates and the team managers, etc., you know, to carry on playing. And I think you have to know your own body to say, actually, you know, I'm going to stop. And if you are injured on the field, you know, particularly with rugby, you really should come off and get some.
Do you have to sort of put that in while you're doing the physio for them to suddenly realise, hang on, I shouldn't be doing this?
I mean, a lot of it is what you should and shouldn't be doing. I think, as I say, a lot of it is advice.
I'm doing a bit of massage on my head.
You are, you're doing. No, a lot of it is advice and giving people the, you know, parameters of when they should be doing things and when they shouldn't be doing things. And I think also, particularly with children, I mean, we see a lot of children, and I think sometimes, you know, there's a lot of pressure from the team and parents for them to be actually participating in the sport, and sometimes you just have to back off, particularly with a growing child.
Because, I mean, there was one of the things, I hate to say that word, the budget, they're saying how they're going to give more money to schools, a certain amount of schools, so they can do longer hours, so they can do things like sports.
Yeah.
Do you think because, we've gone for a state, when I was at school, sports every week to the decline, that they're not really prepared for going out and doing all these activities?
I think that's a really good point. And I mean, personally, I think children should be doing sport every day.
Yes.
And I think that it should start at primary school. So I think they should, I mean, there's a lot to be said for, particularly, you know, the boys, the fidgety boys who can't sort of concentrate. Do you know what I mean? They actually would be better off, I mean, I'm talking about the ideal world, if they actually went and did a sort of even 20 minutes of physical exercise before they sat down, and then perhaps get them to concentrate. And then perhaps late morning, back up doing something else again. I think that is really the way they've got to, you know, I think that's a really great thing for lots of people.
Tuning in your body.
Tuning in
it?
And getting to know your body, because I think it's quite interesting. People who've done a lot of sport for a long time know their body. They know what they can do. They know how to move. I always find that fascinating when I'm treating people and giving them exercises. You know, some people just get it just like that, and others really struggle because they probably have never done any exercise particularly, and then you're asking them to do something and it's really alien.
How do you feel then because very recently they were talking about certain schools that weren't allowing kids to go out and be boisterous in the playground?
Because
it's sort of, that's where it all starts from, isn't it? If you've got that mindset of, I'm not allowed to go out and burn off all this excess energy, and you just take it to the next level of your life, you're never going to do this, are you?
I
found out very recently that, you know, I just found out how how much I wasn't doing, you know, exercise, any at all. Even walking now, I take it very seriously. I'm walking at least the 10,000 steps per day.
Well done. Yeah.
And, you then work out, you think, crikey, I've walked the equivalent of 35 miles this week, but I feel so much
better. It's better for doing... Well, you're getting the endorphin release. So, you know, your chemicals in your brain, your body, are actually giving you that feel-good factor. And that's really important. It's good for mental health, but it's also just good for us generally, you know. And also, if you feel good about doing something, you will do it. But if you don't experience that, you're not going to ever know about that, are you? But it's also good for pain as well. So if you're in pain, actually doing physical activity gives your endorphins a boost, and you start getting these going around the body, and so therefore you're going to be in less pain potentially. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why you should do activities, actually.
I am in less pain. I used to have a posture problem because of the way that I'd be sitting here.
Yeah.
And I try and keep it straight. And even doing silly things like, you know, when you're watching the TV. I mean, our sofas are the worst things ever, aren't they?
Be comfortable, don't you?
I think the thing is, the fashion has been having a big sloppy sofa. And for certainly... ladies who aren't terribly tall, you know, you can't get your bottom right to the back of the sofa, so you're sort of suspended halfway down there, and then you slump. And then we talk about ergonomics, which is, you know, basically the science of optimum positioning, etc., so that your muscles can be at their best. And so as soon as you're sitting slumped on the sofa watching, I don't know, a movie for 2 hours or something, you're probably not moving a huge amount. That's often when the damage is done, particularly for spinal problems.
That's another thing that I don't think's in school anymore. When I was at school, the teachers would turn round to you and say, sit up straight, and things like that. I don't know if they do that anymore.
I don't know that they do. I don't know that they've given... Having said that, I went to one school on the island many, many years ago, and I was doing a talk about physio and stuff, and I kept saying to these children, you know, sit up, your posture, let's talk about what's a good posture. And at the back, they really weren't engaged at all. They couldn't get the fact that actually slumping was not a great idea. Mm. But, you know, you just wait until they have back pain. As soon as you get a twinge of back pain, you suddenly think about, actually, how am I sitting? Because if I can change my posture, often I can change my pain. And that must be important.
Start early, you know.
I think you're absolutely right.
As early as possible. It's like... It's not until you go to work, an office, and then suddenly you're doing these manual handling courses. You're not really taught at school how to pick things up. So maybe do you think we should be...
Well, I think probably at school. I think if you go back to our day at school, you know, we would do lots of work in the gym. Just think about the gym. We'd be climbing up ropes. We'd be going along the parallel bars. We'd be balancing. You know, all that stuff that was quite basic, but actually really important for developmental stuff for the children. I mean, we're still developing neurologically until we're 6 years old as children. So if you think about that, if you get children going to school at 4 or 5, if you can really, really get them to do all these different activities, that will really help them for the future. And I think you're right. And then you... end up getting that awareness of what is good posture and what isn't good posture. I'm sure it's something that it becomes automatic the earlier you learn it. That's important, I think.
So what about all these chairs that you can buy that there's one...
The kneeling one, yes. Well, that's okay. I think that's fine if you're not sitting for too long. I think if you're sitting and kneeling so that your back is quite nice and straight, but it's jolly hard work on the knees if you're doing that day in, day out. So probably be quite fun to have in an office at home.
You can get off it now, Ian.
Yes. Home office, I think, would be fine for an hour or so. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think it would be great for sitting there all day long. Actually, I'll tell you what's really popular nowadays... is the standing desks that elevate, that you can actually almost press a button and it will elevate from going to a normal position right up to standing.
Wow.
And there's a lot of evidence out there to say that actually if you're standing and working, you're actually using your postural muscles. You're using your postural muscles and you're less likely to have back pain. And it's also great for burning calories. Now, how good is that?
Absolutely.
But I know I don't think I can say IKEA, but IKEA do one, which you can just press a button, an electric one that goes up and down. Lots of other office suppliers.
Okay.
A set of different names. I can do that as well. But
IKEA will now advertise with us.
But, you know, so it's about actually looking at what you need and what in the office. I think smart employers these days would be looking at different positions. And I know a lot of people are hot desking, i.e. they've got various people at the same desk. And that's a problem for a chair point of view. But if you think about it, if you had more people standing, you wouldn't have to worry about it so much, would you?
Right. No.
And my son recently got an injury playing football. Okay, and it's a similar injury to I had 20 odd years ago, ligament damage.
Right, where was that, knee or ankle?
Ankle.
Ankle.
Is there anything he can do? I know you probably want to assess him before you give him any advice, but he's in the army, and the army doctors just told him basically you've got to just rest it for X amount of weeks. You can't do anything physical for 10 weeks. He's struggling with doing anything. Yeah. And you know he can now begin to put some weight on it. It's
weeks is a very long time not to be doing anything.
It is
a long time. I mean, normally we would say, I mean, obviously it depends on the degree of the sprain or the strain. I mean, there are various grades that you can give a strain, and if it's a really bad one, then you know usually we immobilise people, i.e. put them in sort of a plaster or one of these air cast boots these days, which you see.
He had one of those for the first week or so.
Well, yeah, I'm surprised that they're not getting him to do rehab, because normally then you take somebody out of that particular splint and then get them moving, just getting moving, not weight bearing, and then slowly, progressively getting more and more weight bear and stretching and getting the muscles fired up. So that's quite, I think that's quite unusual not to have it's obviously difficult to say just without seeing him, but I would have thought by this stage he should be rehabbing. Because, you know, you get contractile muscles and you get contractile tissue, particularly around the ligaments. So often you have to mobilise that tissue, so deep tissue massage and stuff that, you know, we can do. But also instruct him how to actually activate other muscles and supportive muscles, and also, you know, look at the core muscles, the muscles around the trunks. He'll need that if he's in the army, because presumably he's marching around and should be really physical.
Well, he's not at the moment.
No, I know, but he should be. That's what he needs to.
Absolutely. So there is something he can do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a lot you can do. It's really progressing the exercise regime, but he needs to be ultimately being able to stand on one leg to fire up these little receptors, which are within the ligaments and the muscles and the tendons, which actually give your brain that information coming back. So if you don't do anything and don't rehab at all, the likelihood is that if he goes outside and trips over something, he could re-sprain it. And again, we talked about prevention.
Yeah.
The best way to prevent something is to strengthen in the right way. A lot of hospitals these days, I mean, often you see the weekend warriors who come in from football injuries, spraining ankles, and they just say, we haven't broken it, off you go. But what they don't tell them to do is to start doing this rehab, which is really important to prevent recurrence. So I would say that he should be doing, you know, some standing on one leg type of stuff as a minimum by this stage.
Okay, because it is about 10 weeks.
And, yeah, that's
and
a long
whenever
time.
I've spoken to him very recently, and he said that he's still struggling, he's still, you know, he said he wished he had broken it.
He might have been better off. But surely there's a physio in the army that he could get to see the physios and get started on some treatment?
Cutbacks,
okay.
I don't know. I mean, he's one of those guys that he is so desperate to just get back to some kind of normality, because he's always in the gym, he's always
Worth him going to see somebody. I mean, presumably he's not on the island, but, you know, going to see somebody and just having a one-off assessment.
Funny enough, with a physio. He's coming back next
week.
Oh, there
you go. I'm sure we can fit him in.
Diary.
But it might be worth him just literally having one treatment, you know what I mean, one assessment and treatment, just to see, to put him on the right road, and that might just be enough.
Okay,
because he seems as if he's sort of floundering a bit from what you've said.
I'm thinking exactly the same thing. Yeah. I know you're gonna rest it, but then
but not for that long.
No, exactly, you know. And that's why I'm a little bit worried about him, because, you know, he wants to just get back to some kind of normality, and it just feels like he's not doing anything to help himself. And I'm sure that in these instances there are things that he could be doing. And if you know, you mentioned there, you know, the exercises that you could be doing just to sort of gently get you back into it, and he's not doing anything at all
like that. So he does need to think about that.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
A lot of what we do is self-management and advice, as I say, but it is showing people and sort of progressing them and showing them what they need to be doing. But he does probably need to get someone to have a look at it, really.
Still quite badly swollen as well.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh,
okay, there's still quite a lot we can do about swelling and stuff. And as I say, ice.
Brilliant.
Well, that was a cheap consult. What about here we go. I'll go to me now.
Yeah, go to you.
I get carpal tunnel.
Right, okay.
Hang on, could you just explain what that is?
My hand goes all funny. My arm goes all funny.
So it's these fingers?
Yes.
Half of that one, does that one go?
Yeah, and then it can send it straight up to my elbow.
Hang on, what's it called again?
Carpal tunnel.
Carpal tunnel.
And sometimes I have elbow tennis and...
Elbow tennis.
Tennis elbow. I'm doing the Willy Wonka. Tennis elbow and... Golfer's elbow.
Yes. Oh, right.
So,
okay.
Is there something I should be doing to...
Well, I mean, firstly, we would want to check that you have got a true carpal tunnel. Have you had all the little EMG studies done so that they're knowing what's happening? Okay. This can sometimes come from your neck. Okay.
Right.
So, if you're getting elbow pain as well as hand symptoms, I would personally think be worth having a look at your neck, because quite often you can get those symptoms coming from your neck. Now, it may be that you have got a true carpal tunnel, but there are a few tests and things we can do. If you have got carpal tunnel, it's basically the nerve gets sort of squashed around the wrist. So you need to think about doing some stretches and things. Sometimes, again, I talked about taping. Sometimes you can tape around the wrist and that can open up the space. Or you can put a splint on. You can do that. And sometimes you can try acupuncture. That can actually help.
Right. Okay. And we were talking about acupuncture.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, we talked about endorphins earlier on, didn't we, about the feel-good factor. That's how acupuncture works. Because as soon as that little needle goes in, it's a reflex reaction up to your brain and you get the endorphins being released. And again, that reduces pain, which we talked about earlier. Something called the pain gate theory, which is loosely based on.
Right.
The pain gate theory is when if you think about injuring yourself and you immediately rub it, okay, you get the overriding vibration and that overrides pain.
Right.
Okay, the pain sensor is going up to the brain. Acupuncture is a little bit different from that, but basically you're getting this endorphin release and various other chemicals within the brain. So it can be very powerful. Doesn't work on everybody, but it's about a 50-50 chance of working.
So it's all where you put them in special places?
Well, you can. There's lots and lots of places around the body, lots of points and it's called meridians, which are the channels of energy, which the Chinese relate to an organ. And it's the interrelationship between the qi, which is this non-specific energy that goes around the body. Now, if you believe all that, that's the Chinese side of things. I do, and we all do Western acupuncture at the practice, which really means that if you've got something like carpal tunnel, we will assess it and put the points in, which
These have to be special.
They're very
pins.
Fine.
They're not the pins that for dressmaking.
Oh, goodness. No. They're single-use, disposable needles. Different sizes we can get depending on where we're going to put them in your body. You can have the ones in the face, which are very tiny. Ones that go around your back and your gluteal muscles in your bottom are quite long. But they're single-use disposable, and you can barely see them, actually. I mean, I have to put my glasses on to see them now.
Oh, really?
Because, they're very, very fine, and you barely feel them. So they haven't got a great... And if you think about the injection needle, it's a hypodermic. It's got that air space within, which makes it much bigger and more painful as soon as it goes into the skin because of the resistance. And this is very fine. These needles are very fine, so they go in minimum resistance on the skin, so you don't really feel them going in.
Okay. And a course of them...
Well, it sort of depends how... If it's a very acute injury and you put some needles in, you give somebody some acupuncture, often you just need one session.
Oh, right.
If it's a chronic problem, then maybe up to 10 sessions. Mm. I mean, it just depends what the problem is. But people are good responders or not good responders. I mean, I personally am a really good responder, so I do acupuncture on myself, so I absolutely believe in it 100%. But not everybody...
You should be pain-free, then.
Well, you know, if I have got pain, I'll stick... And I always take them if I go away on holiday. I always take my needles. So, you can treat yourself. But the point is that it can work for some people, and it's a good type of treatment to have because there are very few side effects. Sometimes you can feel a bit sleepy afterwards. Mm. Sometimes it can just feel a bit sore, but it really doesn't have any major side effects, which is positive. And if you think about taking medication, we tend to use it on patients who can't take anti-inflammatories. Okay.
Right.
So therefore it gives them another option, if you like, reducing medication. So sometimes that can really help.
I'll put my appointment in as well then.
For your acupuncture. Oh, I'm a great believer in acupuncture. In fact, I was just about to do my finals about, 35 years ago, whenever it was, and I'd got a wrist injury from playing lacrosse, and I just thought, I can't do my Viva, which was my practical exam, because I couldn't move my wrist. So my tutor at the time had just finished her acupuncture course, which was quite way ahead then. Mm. And she said, look, let me just try some needles. Work like a treat. So I've always believed in it. And I think if you are a good responder, it's something you can always use if you're wanting some treatment.
All right, you're finished now. Can I ask a question?
Talk about acupuncture.
I thought this was a consultation. There's no couch in here.
How do we get hold of you?
So if you want to get hold of the practice, you'll talk to Rachel Bartlett, our wonderful practice manager. She's really knowledgeable. 01983 812 576 is the main telephone number. Okay, or you could email manager@physio-care.com.
Okay.
And we're just about to launch a new website. which is www.physio-care.com. So you can always go onto there as well.
Okay. I'm on there now. So is it going to look differently? Is it?
Yeah, it will do. We've just changed our logo, actually. We've got a different updated logo. So we're just redoing it. So.
Brilliant.
But there's quite a lot of content on there about injuries and, you know, what to do and what various things are. But, yeah.
Okay. Lots of people, that I know have got issues and problems with it, and they have asked me, my son has asked me, my wife has asked me as well. And I do know that there's a little old lady that lives next door to us now. And I don't know whether she will phone in or not.
Right.
I mean, if she is there, we'll give her a couple of minutes. We'll give her a couple of minutes to give us a call. 240-666. Because she has she brings in a tennis ball and she sits on a tennis ball.
Oh, that's probably for piriformis. It's a muscle in your bottom, basically, and it's a very tiny muscle, but it can actually give you, there's something called piriformis syndrome, and it can give you a sciatica,
right?
Because the sciatic nerve goes through that muscle, and if that muscle is tight, it can actually give you signs of sciatica.
Oh, right.
i.e. pain going down the back of the leg can go right down to the foot.
Is a tennis ball the best way forward, though?
Well, if it's working for her, somebody might have told her to do that. I don't think it's the sort of thing you'd go into the shed and get your tennis ball out without being told what to do, is it? I don't think I'd think about that if I wasn't a physio.
Your shed, Ian, you know.
It's quite a common thing, but I think there are. I'm personally, you see, that's when I would like to get my acupuncture needles out, because that's really effective at treating piriformis syndrome. So she's probably managing it herself.
I wonder if this is her now.
Yeah.
Hi, who's this?
Hello, my name's Richard Evans.
Hello, Richard.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Doesn't sound
how are
like
you?
Shirley.
Well,
hello,
I'm
Richard.
Enjoying this programme. I'm just going to turn it off, though, so it doesn't interfere with me speaking to you.
Right, okay.
I'm declaring an interest because I'm a patient of Judith.
Yes, you are, Richard. Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, and I love acupuncture, but that's another story. Now, Judith's been looking after me for a while for a problem I have that we are confused by, and so is the rest of the medical profession. But primarily, I phone because I'm a cyclist. I used to be a racing cyclist, but now I do it purely for recreational purposes and to keep fit. But I'm still very competitive. And the one thing that I've learned from seeing Judith, which may help anyone else who's doing any kind of sport at all, is not just the fact that I used to think that to train to be a racing cyclist, you just got on your bike, you rode it as fast and as far as you could, and therefore when you took part in competitions, you would be better, you could perhaps win. What Judith taught me is that I was actually neglecting all the other muscles that helped those powerful muscles that work on, you know, that move me forward on the bicycle.
Yeah, additional muscles.
And I just thought that, you know, if anyone out there is thinking of taking up sport or want to improve their sporting prowess, then perhaps it's not a bad idea to go and see someone like Judith, go and see Judith, and be checked over and see if they're neglecting those other very important muscles. What do you think, Judith?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, really, because I think it's about actually looking at the whole of the body. Because a lot of the time we just think about, particularly cyclists, are probably just focusing on their legs because that's what they need to get them up the hill sort of thing, the power of the legs. But actually, often, it's about the other muscles or the other muscles on the leg. If you're thinking about the quadriceps, which are the muscles in the front of the thigh, you've also got your hamstrings, which are the muscles around the back, and then you've got your gluteal muscles, which you talked about earlier.
If you're racing, you're leaning forward,
you really
aren't
do
you?
Need to have everything working together in in synchronization, and to have everything working together is really important. And often I think we don't necessarily see that in ourselves. You know, we think, well, we're doing this, we're going out running, we're doing cycling like Richard, or we're doing whatever. But actually, we do need to think about the smaller muscles or the other groups of muscles that do need to complement the main muscles that we're going to be using. And
also,
it's getting that balance. Sorry, Richard, yeah.
And also, I think that the fact that, you know, that we start running, we start cycling or swimming or any exercise, and we're absolutely delighted that we can reach a certain level quite quickly, and we're quite happy with that, and we don't really start thinking about the science of it until something either goes wrong or we need to dramatically improve our performance.
So I think sometimes it's a good idea, isn't it, to perhaps go and consult somebody before that you're going to take up a sport. I mean, I think sometimes probably we wouldn't think of doing that, but actually there's quite a good idea. It's a good idea to go and see somebody like the physios, for example, because we can have a good look at you and say, right, well, actually, you know, if you want to be, I don't know, a runner, maybe running is not the right thing for you. I mean, often we have that conversation with patients, you know, actually, this is probably not the best thing for you to be doing. How about doing this? And give them some other options and the reasons for that, which is quite useful as well.
Or if you're an asthmatic, you go out running. That's
yeah. I mean, in fairness, doing sort of swimming or something for an asthmatic is good. And you know, talking about the inhalers and stuff, but doing some level of activity is important. Mm. But it's just measuring it really and giving some other advice.
Well, the thing is, most people start. They either start at school and carry on.
Yeah.
Or they stop when they finish school.
Yes.
And then start again in later life. I mean, I was part of that marathon running boom. I started running competitively when I was about in my 30s. So you're just delighted that you can do it to begin with. It's quite a surprise at how easy it is to get relatively fit.
Quite quickly,
in reasonable shape and
Get
up to a reasonable level. It really quickly, it surprised me. But it's not until later that you think, I wonder if I'm doing... It's not until something fails.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're cycling, you do 50 miles, and then suddenly your back hurts or your neck hurts. And that, of course, your legs, which don't hurt, then have to work twice as hard.
Yeah.
To overcompensate for the pain elsewhere.
Yeah. I think it's important, isn't it, to sort of just give a sort of a warm down and a warm up sort of advice and all that sort of stuff so that you're getting all the right muscles working when you need them to work.
And do secondary exercise.
And secondary exercise, yeah, cross training, yes.
I mean, I can tell you to Judith just giving me a yoga exercise. But all I have to do is kneel down. Think about it. All I have to do is kneel down with one leg raised and one leg behind me.
Yeah, no lunge.
If I told you, it's the hardest exercise I've ever done in my life.
Is that all to the balance? Is that all because
the
of
balance,
the balance?
Because it's gone.
Yeah.
And this leaves me shaking and quaking.
Yeah. But you'll get there.
No, I will,
you've done it before, you'll do it.
Okay.
How are you now, though? You're all physically fit now. You're all...
Me?
Yeah.
No, I'm an old croc. But it's not Judith's fault. Something went wrong. I went to university late in life, age 57, and halfway through my posture completely collapsed. And I've been seeing, and we still haven't got to the bottom of it, and neither have any of the great medical minds either. I've seen every ist known to man.
Right.
But you still go on your bike and...
That's what I do.
Yeah. You're sitting around the island, whizzing around the Isle of Wight. With your Go Faster Lycra on.
Of course, why not?
Oh, absolutely. No, you need it. You need it.
Okay.
Richard,
thanks, Richard.
Thanks very much for your call. Cheers.
Bye, Richard. Bye.
Can you get the same sort of injuries? There's a lot of spin classes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're static bikes. Can you get the same sort of injuries?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I, to be honest with you, I've injured my own knee doing a spin class many years ago. But I think it's very possible. But if you haven't got the strength and the specific muscles, then you go off and start. And also you get into that competition, don't you? Because in a spin class, you see your neighbour next door is going hell for leather, and then next door,
they say take it at your own pace.
But then if you're competitive...
Yes.
And often people do want to go to those things because they are competitive, because it gives them that sort of feed of the competition. You think, oh, yeah, you've got to be careful. But I think as long as you listen to your own body, and I think that's really what I would say, a bit of advice is really do learn to listen to your body, what feels good.
Your own body.
Yes, I think you have. And just really think about what you're doing and, you know, listen to it. And if you get swelling in various joints, then you really do need to rest. I think that's important to say. It's not good to have swelling around joints and carrying on exercising.
So when you go back, do you analyse this when you had your problem with your knee? Obviously, if you're playing contact sports, you know, there's every chance that you're going to get an injury. But if you're just, I don't know, if you're running on the spot, if you go jogging and stuff like that, if you're warmed up properly, correctly, you should be okay, shouldn't you?
Yeah, you should be okay. But I mean, if you've got muscle weakness in various groups of muscle, then you're more likely to have a problem. And I think particularly for runners, you know, Richard sort of alluded to it, you know, you go out the door, you think this is great, I've just invested in some nice trainers, so that's a good thing to, you know, I've got a bit of lycra, I wear that, that's good idea. Yeah. So you start running, but what you don't think about is actually this is cheap exercise, really, essentially running, and you can do it anywhere, anytime, all the rest of it. But am I fit enough to start running? And that is a common problem, because often people just do not have the strength, in particularly around the pelvic muscles, to be and muscles to be able to support their body to start running. If I'm walking, yeah, and that's again why it's good to have an assessment, only because you can just say, well, actually, you're really weak there, or you're not weak there. You can do this. There's lots of tests we can do with people to just to check those things out. But it's really interesting, and actually, if you watch people running down the by the beach or wherever, there aren't many who you think, actually, do you know, they look absolutely fantastic, they really have got it together. A majority of people you think, oh, you know,
I'm going to go and sit on the beach then.
Don't sit on the beach. Walk, speedy walking might be the best way to go along the beach.
It's funny you say that, because there's a lot of running clubs in and around Newport, and we're going for walks and we're seeing them and we're hearing them as they go by, and you can hear them, and some of them are a little bit heavy, heavy legged, and you can hear the pounding on the, and other people, they kind of glide across.
I do believe there's a body type that should be running, and there's a body type that probably shouldn't be running. Do you know what I mean? I do think if you're really light as a feather, I think you can get away with pretty much anything. If you're a bit heavier, you know, and often people want to run to lose weight, don't they?
Yes.
Then you know, how is your foot hitting the ground, you know, because sometimes people are heel runners, sometimes they're toe runners, sometimes they're midfoot runners. So again, those are all the things you want to have a look at. But you're right, sometimes people really do slam their foot down.
Yeah.
And then they're more likely to have things like shin splints, which are pain up the front of the lower legs. So you've
right, that's something I think I may have struggled with a few years ago, but it seemed to be all right now. But I don't go jogging, because I don't think I'm probably a little bit too heavy for all that jogging malarkey. But I do walk a lot. I was 15 stone back in September. Now I'm 13 stone I'm getting there.
That's good.
A lot of it is down to walking and diet as well, because obviously that's vital too, isn't it? And,
absolutely.
And people tell me all the time, you should be drinking more, you should be, you know, you've got to keep your body
hydrated and stuff. Yeah, nutrition.
Exactly, which is part of the problem with it. A lot of people, they don't drink
enough.
Actually,
just talking about that, we've got, it's National Nutrition and Hydration Week this week, and we've got a post on our Facebook page actually about that, just about hydration. So it's quite, if anybody wants to have a look at our Facebook page.
What is the correct amount of water you're supposed to drink?
Well, you know,
and is it water?
Oh, they give you all these statistics, don't they? I mean, I think 8 glasses of water, which is what they say, is quite a lot.
It's a lot of water.
If you're sitting at home and you've got, you know, access to keep whizzing off to the loo, it's probably not a problem. But if you're in an office environment or in a meeting environment, and you're having, it's quite a lot, isn't it? So I would have thought between 5 and 6 would be adequate, to be honest with you. Good glasses of water, you know, not that I'm an expert on.
Yeah, when I've got a glass of water, sometimes I like to just really drink it all, you know.
Yes, straight away.
And my daughter says, no, you're not supposed to do
that. Sip it, you're supposed to sip it, aren't you? Continue
to
keep yourself hydrated. Yeah, well, perhaps there's an argument to say, if you're thirsty, you are dehydrated. Yeah, so you should be rehydrating.
Right, okay, that's interesting. And is water the best thing?
I think it is the best thing. I personally would always think something which is just natural is better than having anything with all the chemicals. I mean, I think if you're doing a lot of sport, you can buy these rehydration drinks, can't you, etc.
Do they work?
I think they do, because of the electrolyte balance, etc. So I think if you're doing long distances, it's a good idea to have those things. But I think just generally, for the general person who's just doing a bit of sport, I think just water is fine.
What about, somebody said to me very recently, squeeze a lemon juice in and it's better for you.
Well, that's supposed to be better the first thing in the morning. I always have that in the morning, actually, hot water with lemon. That's the first thing I drink in the morning. Nice. That's supposed to be very, very good for your whole abdominal, because it's alkaline, and there's a lot of information at the moment to say if you can have an alkaline diet rather than an acidic diet, that's really good for inflammation within your body, and it's very good for the whole health of the body.
Can we come back after a break, and we come back and just sort of, if we just outline that, because let's be honest, if we are what we put in, And if we are going to get some issues,
I'm not an expert on this. In fact, Lucy Peel, who's a naturopath who's at the practice, is probably the person who needs to come in and have a chat with you specifically about that, because she's that's her line of field. I mean, I just have an interest in it. It's sort of out of my scope of practice to give too much advice on that.
Before we go any further, let's take a quick call, because someone's coming through on the line here. Hi, who's this?
Oh, hello, I'm Chris.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'd like to ask a question about preventing sports-related injuries.
Okay. You're through to Dr. Judy.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Dr. Judy. Hello.
So what are you thinking about prevention-wise?
Well, I run quite a bit, and lots of people have different opinions about whether warming up before you run or cooling down after you run in terms of stretching and what you should be doing and for how long. What would your advice be?
Well, my advice would be to, I think warm-up-wise, I think best thing to do would be to just start off walking rather than worrying too much about doing specific stretches straight off. Then get in, so walk for about 5 minutes and then get into your run. After you've done your run, however long that's going to be, then that's when you really need to be doing your cool down. So I'd be doing sort of 10 minutes in the ideal world, 10 to 15 minutes of cool down. So as you come towards the end of your run, start walking for the last 5 minutes or so, and then as you're walking, you can then start doing some stretches, certainly with your upper limb. You could be doing some stretches with your shoulder, neck. Nobody's going to know that what you're up to, really, so fine doing that. As soon as you stop, think about doing some more dynamic stretches, i.e. stretches when you're moving. So you could be doing some calf stretches rather than just doing a static stretch. You could be doing that as you're moving, so that you're getting the two muscles, big muscles in the calf, your gastrocnemius and your slightly deeper muscle soleus. You could get those moving and getting them stretched out, and then you've also got your hamstrings, which are important to think about.
So with your calf muscles, when you say stretch them out, are you just putting your leg out and
put one out in front of the other, one leg in front of the other, but making sure as you're doing that that you're really keeping your feet really parallel. Don't actually have one heel coming inwards. So that's the classic mistake people make. They have a heel coming in, so you're not stretching the whole of the calf. You need to have the foot really straight. So I think prevention is about actually doing exercises accurately, and that's another issue. If you're going to be doing stretches, you know, you need to know exactly what you should be doing and how to do it. Because a lot of people, for example, do a hamstring stretch, and I mean, they're not even beginning to stretch the hamstring. I always get patients to show me what they're doing. So there are various ways that you can do a hamstring stretch, and again, you want to make it the most functional stretch for that particular person. So particularly,
and how long should you hold a stretch?
Well, ideally, there's a lot of research this, but ideally 45 to 60 seconds is the perfect time. Okay, a lot of it, the time would just say do 10-20 seconds, but in the ideal world, 45 to 60 seconds. But I'm actually coming around to the idea now that I think a stretch should be dynamic. So actually, although you're holding it for quite a long time, you're actually moving as you're holding that stretch. And I think the evidence coming out of all the research now says that a dynamic stretch is much more effective.
I was just trying to imagine you doing a hamstring.
So if you're going to do a stretch for your calf, okay, we're going to make it more dynamic. So you have one foot in front of the other. Have your, let's just say, your left foot in front. Bend your knee. Okay, right foot behind you, making sure that your right foot is really straight. Then you're going to lean forwards, keeping your heel, your right heel on the ground. Okay, and then you can just... He's struggling. Ian's doing this as we're speaking, Chris. So then you can actually go from that position and then back and straighten off your left foot, left knee. That's it. So then you're going into the stretch and back, yeah? And you can actually... So I would suggest that would be the best way to do a stretch, particularly after running.
I've got a job to keep me here on the ground.
I know, because you're probably very tight in your calves, you see, so you should be, So
you should be limbering up first.
Yeah, well, again, you see, somebody perhaps needs to show you what to do, because you're probably just, can't see because the desk's in the way, but you probably just need to actually be a bit more specific, and probably not such a wide stance.
Right.
And such a long stride length, so we perhaps need to fine-tune that.
But I can feel it.
You can feel it, So you shouldn't be actually feeling anything that's real pain. You should just go to the point of feeling something. So Chris, when you're actually stretching, you shouldn't be feeling any pain. You should just start to feel that stretch and then backing off.
So if you feel the pain, you've gone too far.
You have gone too far. You shouldn't be doing pain.
Chris, do you live locally?
Reasonably.
Because we could become stretch buddies, couldn't we?
Absolutely, yeah. I think we need to get Judith on TV, actually, to see these stretches.
I think you're right.
I'll do a podcast then, the stretching podcast.
We should do that next time you come in.
Thank you very much indeed.
Hey, thank you, Chris. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Should you be giving yourself a good stretch when you wake up in the morning?
I think there's a good evidence to say, and I would always suggest, particularly as we get older, little top tip of the day, put every joint in your body through its full range every day. Now, that shouldn't be immediately you jump out of bed, but after sort of half an hour, things have started to warm up, then you could start to do that. Now, we're talking about the ideal world here, because it's quite difficult for those of us who are flying out the door to drop the children at school, or, you know, dashing off to the office or off to work, but that would be the best thing you could do. Top tip then. Put every joint in the body through its full range every day. And if everybody started doing that when they're in the late 30s, 40s, I really do think we'd have a lot less injuries and problems as we got older.
Okay.
And I think the trouble is, Chris was talking about prevention of sports injuries, but, you know, just prevention of general injuries and general problems. If we have flexibility within a joint, then we're less likely to injure it. And if we have strength around that joint, we're less likely to injure it.
All right, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to chat some more. We'll do some stretching while we're having a commercial break. All right. Well, I am anyway.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com. This is Vectis Radio.
Putting the community back into local radio.
Tense. Nervous headache. Life just bringing you down.
You know what you need? Tretch of Eon, the debut album, All Out Tomorrows. Available over the counter, no prescription needed. HMV, Amazon, iTunes, all your favourite record stores. And if you want a t-shirt or a signed copy, go to churchofeon.com. Can't you feel it?
If you're one of those people that has to live life on a tight budget, you might want to take advantage of the £10 meal deal at Hamilton's Fine Foods.
£10 meal deal, I started probably about 2 years ago now, and we've managed to sustain the prices that you still get the full value of that, which is the chicken, the mince, the ham, the sausages, and that chicken will go for a family of four quite easily. You've still got the stock afterwards if you want to, and the bones to make a soup. Sausages obviously is a meal in itself, the ham is another evening meal.
Hamilton's Fine Foods, you'll find them on Dace Way and Pyle Street in Newport, also in Wootton and Cowes too.
Hi, Maggie Curry here, consultant, coach, speaker and author. I know how hard it can be to get through each day following a life trauma. I also know you are strong enough to stand alone, smart enough to know when you need help, and brave enough to ask for it. Please get in touch with me today for a free conversation about building the foundations for your positive future. It is time now for you to invest in yourself. Contact me at hello@maggiecurry.co.uk or on 01983 754 666.
The White Military and Heritage Museum. Situated on the main Cowes to Newport Road, the museum will excite your senses. Adults and children of all ages can experience the surge of adrenaline on an armoured vehicle ride around the tank track. For a real treat, why not try a ride in one of the Centurion tanks? There's also a covered rifle range to test your shooting skills. Enjoy refreshments in the cafe or the mess bar. Come along to the White Military and Heritage Museum, where you will be welcomed with open arms by our volunteer team. All profits are redistributed among armed service charities. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Ladies Late Lunch, between 1 and 4 on a Thursday afternoon for the discerning moments in your life. And if you believe that, you believe anything.
Stay social and get in touch. It's Vectis Radio on Twitter. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre. Our packages are great value and we constantly check our prices to ensure we remain competitive against other providers. Call for a chat on 01983 240 240.
Welcome back to part two. We've got Dr. Judith in. We are talking sport injuries. We're talking, you know, just physical injuries. We're talking how to keep fit, stretches that you should do to prevent. Because that's the main thing, isn't it? Prevention is a massive part of this. We were talking
about
the stuff we should be eating and drinking before and prevention. If I don't ask this question, my wife will kick me when I get home and I'll probably need some attention. she has... she won't thank me for saying this, but she's got a strange shaped back.
Right.
Sort of.
So she fits like an S shape, is
yes.
it? Right.
And she had a horse injury some years ago,
yeah.
and every now and again something pops out.
Right.
And she used to have a chiropractor. She would go to him. He would sort her out. He's now retired. She's now reluctant to go to anybody. And I said, right, okay, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Judith. And she says, I will go and see Dr. Judith, but I want to, she wanted to know, what's the difference between a chiropractor and...
A physio and osteopath. Well, it's a really good question, that. And physiotherapists are trained in hospitals, well, in university, but within the hospital, so within the with doctors, okay. So we're medical, okay. Chiropractors are trained independently, and they are looking at more of the alignment of the bones within the body, and I believe that their belief is that if you have alignment, then the whole system can function. If things are out of alignment, then they can't. Physios don't necessarily agree with that. Because we would say, well, everybody's different. We're all asymmetrical. You know, some people have got one shoulder up here, one shoulder down there, but they function very well and haven't got pain. We tend to look at how you can maximise full function from the body, i.e. with muscles, range of movements and joints, etc. So it's really about looking at the whole of the body and how we can get things to work at their maximum, really, and their full potential.
Okay.
So it's subtly different. I mean, I think it's horses for courses, to be honest with you, because I think, you know, a lot of people will swear by going to the chiropractor, a lot of people swear by having physio or osteopathy. It's fine. You know, it's a choice you make. I think often it's actually the person that you have the relationship with that you actually trust, and you know, if they say do this, you do that. I think what I would say is that physios have got, if you think about a toolbox, this is how I see it. You know, if you open a toolbox, our toolbox, certainly all of us in the practice, we do acupuncture, we do exercise prescription, we do something called electrotherapy, we do manipulation, mobilisation, we do loads of things. So actually we can choose what we want for each patient. Mm. So it's very bespoke.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not just one click fixes all. Now, I'm not suggesting other professions do that, but I think physio is very, very flexible. We have a lot of options that we can give our patients, which is the true strength.
It makes sense to me. Is it as simple as, okay, something's popped out? Well, this, you know, somebody else can pop it in, but it's better to find out why it's popped out and why it's a problem.
Yes, I mean, popped out. I mean, you know, things don't tend to pop out. I mean, if you have a really bad prolapse of your disc, you can have the disc that actually moves a little bit, and that is significantly painful, and it's a problem. It does usually settle and sort itself out, but we would always assess to find out where the problem is. And often you may be getting a low back pain, and actually the problem may be coming from the mid back or further up. You know, it doesn't always mean that where you're getting the pain is where the problem is.
Because there's people that have their shoulder pops out.
But that may be something complete. That may be a dislocating shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, it may be because they have got lax ligaments.
Right.
And so they may require surgery, or they may just require a lot of strengthening exercises around the shoulder. So that can pop out. Spinally, you tend to find things don't pop out as such.
Right.
Although when you manipulate, you can often hear clicks and clunks and things. It's usually... theory is that it's the nitrogen within the cells,
right,
that you hear.
But should we worry about them pops and clicks when we hear them?
No, I don't think so. I think, I mean, obviously, we, you know, often knees pop and click,
yes,
don't they?
Yeah, all the time.
I think ongoing pain is something that you probably don't want to continue with, and ongoing swelling is something that probably needs looking at. So,
do you get more injuries now? People watching and reading their telephones and
completely.
All their phones.
Yeah, I call it iPad neck, because I mean, as soon as the iPads came out, we ended up having loads of people we saw, because they're just sitting for hours on end on their sloppy sofa, which we talked
themselves.
About. Yeah. You know, looking down at the iPad, as you say, trying to diagnose themselves, but just sitting in that sloppy posture, and you know, it's just not healthy. You know, it's fine to do that. I see it like some scales. So if you see a set of scales, okay, the old-fashioned scales, yeah?
Yeah.
You sit on your iPad or whatever, you just sofa watching your iPad for half an hour. Actually, you need to balance it off by doing a half an hour of exercise or a different posture. So actually, you're sitting all flexed up. You need to be then suddenly opening up and doing the complete opposite. So you're basically doing what we call extension.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? So walking or running or even just doing some housework or something probably would be active.
That's
so
a
you're
word,
working
isn't it?
What, your postural muscles. Yes.
You're getting up on me again.
Okay,
like it.
So it's just about refocusing what you're doing. So okay. Important, changing and
I found myself because obviously a few months ago, I started taking it seriously about losing weight and obviously going doing a bit more exercise. And I find myself now sitting in a chair, and I always make sure that there's two cushions behind me so I can keep my back as straight as possible. Yeah. But I always find myself as well stretching my legs.
Good.
When we're watching a program, and I'll be doing that thing with my feet and like dancing in midair.
Well, that's nice. But what you could try and do is just to bring your knee up to your chest. So you're actually lifting up that way rather than just doing the jiggling around with the lower part of the leg. So that might be quite nice.
Or doing a
rotational stretch.
My
spinal
wife
stretch.
Say, what are you doing?
Rotation
what are you
stretch.
Doing?
Yeah. I used to be able to bring my foot at my big toe and
into your mouth.
To my mouth.
Could
yes.
you? Gosh, very flexible.
Yeah.
Very flexible.
How long ago was that?
When I was young.
There's no reason why you can't do that now. Is it? You've got to build up to
it. It's not always good to be that flexible, though. Don't forget, because actually, you can be too flexible. And we get again, we see a lot of people who are too flexible
and they have
problems because they haven't got the strength. Okay, I know I keep on about strength, but a strength around the muscles and the joints to actually protect the joints. Yeah. And that can almost be more of a problem. Because
you see those
sometimes.
Entertainers and they're putting their body in such a strange position.
Yeah. I mean, ballet dancers, if you think about ballet dancers, you know, when they're young, they're fantastic to watch, but they get a lot of injuries because they are taught and just conditioned to overstretch all the time, and so at some point your joints are just going to say, do you know, I've had enough.
Is there more sports that are more prone than others? I mean, I'm guessing rugby.
I think contact sports, you're more prone to having injury. You know, football, rugby, we see a lot of those injuries. But even things like sailing, sailing injuries tend to be quite nasty, can be, because you can get bang on the head and all the rest of it. But you can have quite a lot of hand injuries and neck injuries with sailing because of, sitting, watching the sail or looking at the sails for.
Is that more when they're racing?
Yeah, usually, yes. I think you tend to find the hobby sailor is not going to have quite so many problems.
Hey, look, we've run almost right out of time. So, I mean, time just flew
by. It does,
doesn't
it?
Yeah,
we'll do. I'd love to come back. Yes, we'll do.
You have to think of some exercises that we can do whilst doing the show.
So, yes, okay.
Bring your pins.
Yes, I'll bring my pins, yeah.
So there's that one you can do.
That's a nice one. Actually, if you just think about just squeezing shoulder blades together, don't necessarily take your arms right back. Just try and keep your arms down and just squeeze your shoulder blades together.
All right, yeah.
That's a really lovely one, actually. Really good for preventing neck pain.
Just so people that can know what's going on, we're kind of doing the Barbara Windsor thing here, aren't we?
Well, we are. Well, if a lady was doing it, just think about squeezing your shoulder blades around the bra strap level. That's the easiest thing to say. A bit more tricky for the chaps, but think about just trying to do that. The other thing you can do is, again, I call it the double chin exercise, but just tuck your chin in.
Oh, yeah, that
so
one.
That you're just trying to, but keep your eyes at eye level, so you're looking at something at the same level, so you're not looking down, and just doing a tuck. That's a nice one as well. So those two exercises are really good at preventing neck pain.
Okay, excellent.
I'm going to sit this doing that all the time.
Yeah, or you can do that. Yeah, just move muscles. Muscles love movement, though.
How do we get hold of you?
Okay, so if you want to get hold of us, speak to Rachel, as I say, our practice manager, on 812576. She's in Ryde, and she can either give you an appointment at our clinic in Ryde or in Bembridge or our clinic in Cowes. And we also have a domiciliary service, i.e. visiting people at home, which we're just starting to do a bit more of with a lovely Liz, who's one of our physios. We're also online, so you can email us at manager@physio-care.com, or you could visit our website and do a contact form via the website, which is www.physio-care.com.
Fantastic. We'll come back again, won't you?
Oh, yes, I'd love to. Yes,
okay,
thank you.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed today.
Yeah, don't go and injure yourself, though.
We're going to carry on with those stretches.
Yes. I should be watching. A webcam. Have you got a webcam up there? I can have a look at
it. No, but we're going to have. We're going to have the Vectis Radio sports webcam.
Yeah,
stretching our calves and everything.
Lovely.
So, thank you very much for
coming
in.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
Really good fun. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff there we can take on board and hopefully others too. We've got to go.